Kale and Company weekday mornings 6 till 10.
What about the critics who are humanitarian activists and others who are worried about these deportations, saying families are going to be separated, people are going to be put in tents and in terrible conditions? They have real concerns about the way you plan to actually meet out those things you're planning to do.
Yeah, so this term is something you're going to hear a lot in the next couple of months, the next couple of years, Shannon. Family separation. I think it's important. That's a euphemism. That is a dishonest term to hide behind the fact that Joe Biden has not done border enforcement. If you say, for example, in the United States, we have a guy who's convicted of a violent crime and has to go to prison, we want that guy to go to prison. But yes, it does mean that that guy is going to be separated from his family. That is the consequence of committing violence upon your fellow citizens. If you come into this country illegally, you need to go back home. You need to have basic law enforcement. And what the Democrats are going to do is they're going to hide behind this. They're going to say that this is all about compassion for families. It is not compassion to allow the drug cartels to traffic small children. It is not compassionate to allow the worst people in the world to send minor children, some of them victims of sex trafficking, into our country. That is the real humanitarian crisis at the border. You're not going to exacerbate it through law enforcement. You're going to fix it through law enforcement. And that's what Donald Trump is going
to
do.
But fair to say, those egregious things that you cite that I would think all Americans are against.
Sure.
That's a small fraction of the millions of people who are here who have built lives. Many of them have been here for decades.
So you do have hundreds of thousands, maybe even a million people who, in addition to crossing into the border illegally, have also committed some measure of violent crime. So it's actually a very large number of people, Shannon. And the point is that if you want to fix the overall border crisis, you have to engage in law enforcement. We can't buy into this lie, really, from the extreme left, because I agree with you. Most Americans want common sense border enforcement. We can't buy into this lie that law enforcement at the American southern border is somehow not compassionate to families who want to cross illegally. Our number one responsibility is compassion to our fellow Americans, and that starts with enforcing the southern border. You cannot have a country of law and order, of stability, of basic good governance, unless you get control of what Biden has left us at the American southern border. And President Trump is committed to doing it on day one.
So that'll be the phrase that the Democrats use, family separation. You are going to hear that ad nauseum for the next 4 years. But you know what's interesting when you talk about Democrats trying to tug at the heartstrings of family separation? Why is it that they are more in their feelings over an illegal immigrant being separated from their child after entering the country illegally and or committing a crime, perhaps even a violent crime? They're more in their feelings about that separation than they are the separation of now the lost and deceased, like Lake and Riley, from her parents. Ask yourself why that is the narrative and the vibe that the Democrat Party gives off. Because to be honest, if you're here illegally and you get separated and you go to jail and your child is without you, that sucks for the kid. But you know what? If it's the dad, then the old man shouldn't have broke the law. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. All right, I'm not in the business of feelings for people that commit crimes that have no business being here. It sucks for that child, 2 years old, 2 months old, 12 years old, whatever it might be. But you know what? The parents shouldn't have committed the crime. Sorry.
Yeah, and I think this is why, in many ways, what J.D. Vance so astutely, you know, describes is why in, let's say, the so-called black and brown community in Philadelphia and beyond across the nation, thinking about the Democrat talking points where they're so concerned about quote-unquote separating families, and yet there are individuals, and especially women, who I know Trump commuted their sentences and highlighted this in his presidency, where you have women and moms and grandmoms who, under that Biden rule, remember from back in the day, had put people behind bars for, yes, drug violations, but nonviolent violations. And so they were separated from moms, dads, grandparents, separated from, you know, their kids and grandkids.
Yeah.
And so,
well, it's because we have a fatherhood crisis in this country.
Yeah.
We have a lot of dudes out there that don't want to take responsibility for the child that they created. I think a lot of Tony Dungy, former NFL coach, did a podcast recently, And I think he's conservative. I think I know he's conservative. Very religious man. I believe first African-American head coach to win the Super Bowl. And he said the fatherless epidemic in this country is a big reason why we have so many people that commit the crimes they do, because they didn't have a dad in their life, you know, to scare them straight or knock them smart or whatever you want to call it, right? And they were raised by mom or their aunt or their grandmother or in foster care. It's really remarkable.
Yeah, but when you think of, I'll just say this, policies matter. And so, like, all the aid to the families with dependent children, all those laws back in the day, when you think about the breakdown of the family, and this goes to a certain economic group, but hits hard, the so-called black and brown community, especially African-American community, but there are many white and African-American families who are fatherless, so-called, because if you are a part-time worker or in and out of work, and you're the mother of your children lives separately from you, you get a ton of money with the aid to families with dependent children. Those policies from back in the day are often blamed as an unintended consequence, if you will, of separating or promoting the fact that you have these fatherless homes, because the dad now won't live with the mom or marry the mom. And I'll be honest, I have two relatives who fit into this category in Michigan and Illinois. And so they live separately. The dad is in and out of work. It goes to a certain class of individuals. And so this is a horrible policy. They need to fix it. They really do.
Mm-hmm. Shannon, that's Shannon Bream, right?
Who, yes.
Yeah.
She asked about the fact that this administration now is claiming that the border crossing right now is at the lowest it's been since, like, I think 2019. J.D. Vance responds to that. I think this is cut 18, Phil. Go.
So President Biden is doing what he can on his way out the door on a number of issues, and critics would say some of those appear to be aimed at blunting what you all might have planned. Let's talk first about immigration. Politico has this headline: Biden extends temporary status of nearly a million migrants ahead of Trump deportations. Says the move allows people from certain countries who currently have temporary protected status, or TPS, to renew work permits and deportation protections, extending the program for El Salvador until March 2026 and Sudan, Ukraine, and Venezuela until October of 26. How does President Trump plan to handle these last-minute things, and what are his own executive actions planned, especially with regard to the border on day one?
Yeah, so Shannon, if you step back a little bit, I do think it's important to reiterate that not just on the border, but on a whole host of issues, President Biden has left us an absolute dumpster fire. Now, we're excited to get to work, but we need to be open and honest about the fact that President Biden has not left the next administration in a good place, right? FEMA's funds are depleted. We have a wide open southern border. Oil is going through the roof. Bond yields went from 4.1% to 4.8% in a month. And that's on top of the fact that President Biden has been running the largest peacetime deficits in the history of this country. So we've got a lot of debt, a lot of problems, and a wide open southern border. And thank God that Donald Trump takes office in a week and a half, because we need somebody to actually govern this country effectively. Now, on the border crisis in particular, the most important thing that we have to do is to send a message that America is closed to illegal immigration. For the past 4 years, we have been wide open, and you're going to see, I think, dozens of executive orders coming from the Trump administration, coming from us on day one, that send a message to Customs and Border Patrol: you guys are allowed to do your job again. And to illegal immigrants all over the world: you are not welcome into this country illegally. If you want to come through, you've got to come through proper channels.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. It's common sense, really. It's not even a great point. It's just common sense. If you have a flood in your house and your faucet in your bathroom sink went nuts and you've got water everywhere, well, what's the first objective? You got to seal off the faucet to stop the leak and stop the flooding. That's giving these agents at the southern border all the power they need, all the resources they need, and the advertisement, the message of, sorry, this country is closed for business. And then it's getting all that water out. You know, you get your mop, you get your buckets, you get your towels. Now we got to dry it up, and we got to get rid of all that extra precipitation. So to me, that'll be the toughest part. And that's where I think the media is going to again tug at the heartstrings, because, you know, there will be deportation efforts where ICE and other agencies that are being videotaped, whether it's on their own, you know, not dashboard cam, but chest cam, or citizens, you know, we talked about them showing up at the workplace to deport people.
Yep.
You know, like MSNBC or, you know, left-wing media will take those 38-second clips and show just how inhumane the Trump administration is. They drug him out while he was in the middle of his shift. Okay, well, you gotta crack some eggs if you want to make an omelet. Sorry.
I think a couple things that kind of crushes that old argument of, oh, you're going to, you know, you're going to separate families and this is cruel. First of all, the crime problem, the cartels, and I mean, we've talked about it. I've reported it in news for a long time that we know that the cartels are here in our area and specifically targeting and burglarizing homes, for example, mostly in the suburbs, mostly in, I mean, Montgomery County along the main line and as well in Chester County and somewhat in Delaware County. So, the fact that we do have gangs and cartels and so on and so forth that we know are here, but also that House Judiciary Committee, all those investigations that we've talked about where they have proven that there are these sex traffickers, these child traffickers. They're using some of these Biden and so-called parole programs or under the guise of like Homeland Security specialty programs. And they're smart.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the sicko part, that this is huge money. And so they've been able to maneuver through like our government programs and then continue their sex trafficking. And the sick piece of this, I will say too, they got to crack down on is that we are in this country, we reportedly are the biggest customers for the sicko stuff with child trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
I hope to God they crack down and make these arrests, which I haven't really seen, quite frankly. We keep hearing that, you know, America, that Americans, these sickos, these pedophiles, you know, who want these trafficked kids, ew, who are coming into this country, they're supported by big money customers, citizens of our country.
Yep.
J.D. Vance also weighed in on what's happening in California and the confidence of the government there in California, local leadership, I should say. Roll it.
So I want to talk to you about the fire situation in California, because your administration will be coming in, taking over the reins as the feds are trying to meet that, along with many other emergency situations they have going on. Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, has written to President Trump saying, let's not be divisive right now. Come out and visit. Let people see us working together. Any indication the president-elect may do that?
Well, I know the president would love to visit California. And first of all, you know, our hearts go out to everybody who's been affected by the storms. I've seen some of these videos of people where, you know, folks have lived in those homes for 25, 30, 35 years, and everything is gone. And whatever your political affiliation, it's hard not to see those images and just be heartbroken for our fellow Americans who are going through a very tough time. And I do think, frankly, the federal government has to do a better job. President Trump is committed to doing a better job when it comes to disaster relief. That's true for the hurricane victims and flood victims in North Carolina. It's true for the fire victims in California. We have to do a better job. We need competent, good governance. Now, that doesn't mean you can't criticize the governor of California for, I think, some very bad decisions over a very long period of time. I mean, some of these reservoirs have been dry for 15, 20 years. The fire hydrants are being reported as going dry while the firefighters are trying to put out these fires. There is a serious lack of competent governance in California, and I think it's part of the reason why these fires have gotten so bad. We need to do a better job at both the state and federal level.
Well, I tell you, you're Trump. You sit down after Inauguration Day, and it's you know, January 21st, and you've got your administration and your cabinet members. You probably just look around and you say, where do we start? Like, where do we begin? We've got Los Angeles. We've got the Middle East. We've got Russia, Ukraine. I've got the border. We've got energy. We've got the economy. You know, the thing that's really interesting about this as well is I thought for the most part, and I watched a lot of that J.D. Vance interview yesterday, He takes a very measured response.
Mm-hmm.
He did say that, you know, incompetence, but he could have been a lot more harsh. I mean, you can sit there and say, like I always say, elections have consequences, right? And you don't want to say that as the incoming vice president, but you know what? You get what you vote for. In a lot of these areas with these policies, with this far left approach, I mean, there's a reason why Philly rejected it. Is New York going to reject it? I mean, Kathy Hochul, we've got Eric Adams. Our buddy Sean Farish keeps saying, and he's probably correct when he says this, that Cuomo is going to be the next mayor of New York after what he did during the pandemic with nursing homes. So the question is, do you ever learn your lesson? It looks like New York probably won't. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that L.A. won't. Doesn't I mean, there's only so much the federal government can do. I mean, it's ultimately the citizens of Los Angeles. You vote for this.
Speaking of New York, doesn't the congestion pricing start today?
Yes.
Oh, it actually already started.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
I've got the cover of the New York Post.
That's why over the weekend you saw New York officials saying they won't vote for the new budget deal unless it, you know, gives them breaks to some of what's going on. By the way, speaking of breaking news, the big news this morning, Israel and Hamas reportedly having a breakthrough in ceasefire talks this morning.
So haven't we gone through this song and dance for the last couple of months?
Mm-hmm. Well,
I feel like every time I'm turning around, it's like, there's a ceasefire, there's a ceasefire. It's like, okay.
Are the hostages going to be released?
That's what their Hamas is. That's the tease this morning.
80% of the hostages are dead, guys. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's the truth.
Yeah, I agree.
But either way, the families deserve to know.
100%.
I mean, I can't 100%. Even imagine.
Well, whoever is still left and alive needs to be released.
But that's one of the, you know, and remember what Trump said. There'll be hell to pay.
Mm-hmm.
So they know TikTok. They have, I mean, 1 week from today, when we're at the NAC, Trump's sworn in, they know that. And by the way, when Trump says there's hell to pay, he's not talking about Hamas. That's a message to Iran. You want to be broke again? You want your money to dry up? Go ahead. Make my day. I'm paraphrasing. That's Trump. I'm Trump.
Jimmy Kelly, I need that on the board. Dawn Stensland, make my day. Drop that can replace the rim shot that Greg desperately wants.
No, you don't have to replace it. It was a joke. It was a moment of irritability. I'm prone to more and more of those these days. Representative Maxine Waters was on with Chris Cuomo over the weekend. Say, look, she's not playing politics on fires, but rich people need to pay their fair share. These people never. You can say what you want. You can say what you want about all of them. They're on brand. They're on message. No matter what the situation is, rich people need to pay their fair share. Donald Trump is a convicted felon. Like it's all. You know, keep your eye on the prize.
Mm-hmm.
Auntie Maxine and her bad wig. Roll it.
Instead of this business about Democrats or Republicans, get the information up on the screens. Where can you go in Altadena? Where can you go in Pasadena? Where can you go in Malibu? Where can you go in the Palisades? Where can you go in San Fernando Valley? They don't know. They're looking for help, and that's what we should be dedicated to.
I agree.
And you too.
We are doing it. We will continue to do it. I think you are right. However, it can also be seen that you don't want to talk about the politics because it's on your party, because the mayor and the governor are Democrats who arguably should have had the people in Altadena better prepared for this. They should have the resources more available,
Chris,
so they don't need me to put them up.
Good for him.
Because the state has been doing the work.
Chris Zuckerberg.
And that if they've been preparing the situations for wildfires like they were made aware of, instead of cutting deals with PG&E, and insurance companies, they would have prepared the state.
Damn.
That is not unfair criticism. Mm. Is it too soon? Maybe, but the questions are real.
Let me tell you something.
Uh-oh.
I'm not 47.
In the business of protecting anybody.
Uh-oh.
And I think that my work over the years that I've been involved have been absolutely on point in dealing what has to be dealt with in order to help the people. First thing you got to understand is services cost money.
Oh.
And we should be willing to get the richest people in this country, the richest 1% that is protected, make sure they pay their fair taxes.
There we go.
So that we can have the money to provide the services.
They have the money.
With
they
that
have the money.
And with those resources, the people who have been selected or elected to do the job should do the job. I don't care who it is.
Yeah.
It could be Democrat, it could be Republican, it could be whatever. But the fact of the matter is, we all should have heavy hearts right now.
By the way, regardless of what you think about Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
they pay a lot of taxes.
Oh, of course.
A lot of taxes. So yes. it has nothing to do with them not paying their fair share.
Just got to continue with the grift, right?
They're paying a ton of taxes.
Yep.
And it doesn't... And still, they had inadequate service.
Yep. By the way, who's got the worst wig? Maxine Waters or Judge Jeanine?
This lady... You know, she turned August 15th. She was born in 1938.
Who, Auntie She's Maxine?
Maxine Waters,
by the
86
way,
years young. Bless her.
That's what AOC calls her. I'm not, you know.
Yeah.
Auntie Maxine.
I am anti-Maxine. And sometimes anti-vaccine.
All right, let me, because we have to make way for Harry. Let me play two clips from Chris Ray, who was on 60 Minutes last night. Don, hold on to your wig. No, I'm kidding.
your wig.
This is Chris Ray defended the Mar-a-Lago raid.
You really want to do this with Harry on deck, or you want to save this where Don can get a full 8-minute tangent?
I want to play it. I want to play it. We have a new system here. All right, roll it. 25, go.
And not letting preferences, partisan or otherwise, drive or taint the approach.
And were those the rules followed in starting the investigations against the president-elect?
We tried very hard to make sure that we've stayed faithful to those principles and those rules in every investigation that I can think of that's been occurring on my watch.
Trump is also livid about the FBI search in 2022 for classified files at his home. A Trump lawyer certified that all classified papers had been returned to the government, but the FBI said later it found 72 documents marked top secret or secret, at least one about U.S. military strength.
I want to be careful not to discuss too many of the specifics of an investigation, but what I can tell you is that part of the FBI's job is to safeguard classified information. Mm-hmm. And when we learn that information, classified material, is not being properly stored, we have a duty to act. And I can tell you that in investigations like this one, a search warrant is not, and here was not, anybody's first choice. Hmm. We always invariably try to pursue the least intrusive means, first trying to get the information back voluntarily, then with a subpoena. And only if, after all that, we learn that the agents haven't been given all of the classified material, and in fact, those efforts have been frustrated, even obstructed, then our agents are left with no choice but to go to a federal judge, make a probable cause showing, and get a search warrant. And
no choice.
That's what happened here.
No choice.
Did you hear that, Dawn? It was his
duty
to raid Melania's lingerie drawer.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it funny, though, that, I mean...
Sorry.
They didn't raid. They quietly met with President Biden and allowed, allegedly, that he would turn over documents, some of which... There are senators who still can't figure out how he, you know, snuck those out at when he was a senator. Not even a veep, not even the president.
And Joe can't even remember anyway.
So funny how, well, he remembers. It's just funny how that works. No, this is, I don't care what Chris Ray says, this never ages well. And I think this is a disgrace.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope they stop this. I don't wish all this hot mess on any administration.
Yeah, I agree.
This is a disgrace.
Yep.
Shame.
One more. This is Chris Ray on China, like what's happening with the Chinese government. You can roll this.
China's cyber program is by far and away the world's largest.
Good.
Bigger than that of every major nation combined.
Great.
And has stolen more of Americans' personal and corporate data than that of every nation,
cool,
big or small, combined. But even beyond the cyber theft, there's another part of the Chinese cyber threat that I think has not gotten the attention publicly that it, I think, desperately deserves, and that is Chinese government's pre-positioning on American civilian critical infrastructure to lie in wait on those networks to be in a position to wreak havoc and inflict real-world harm at a time and place of their choosing.
The Chinese have already insinuated malware into critical American infrastructure.
That's correct.
Like what?
Things like what? Water treatment plants. We're talking about transportation systems. We're talking about targeting of our energy sector, the electric grid, natural gas pipelines. And recently, we've seen targeting of our telecommunications system.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so why weren't they focused? They spent gazillions of dollars, I don't even know the dollar amount, on tracking down and hunting down J6ers for freaking years later. They're still tracking them down, reportedly. They spent how much money persecuting a former president and, soon to be next president? Mm-hmm. Why didn't they just go full force then and focus on all of this?
Yep. Totally agree. All right. That'll do it for, I guess that was technically Cut Sheet Part 1. Part 1-A.
No, it's, I spilled my
Your bucket. All right, I like that.
Your bucket?
I like didn't that. Know what I was going to say.
Yeah, the firefighters in L.A. were spilling their bucket, too.
Tom Walsh said, why did he not stop at it? It was his job. I mean, it's a very good point.
Thank you.
I mean, it's a good point.
Because they were too focused on
literally
silencing all of us.
Yeah.
Right? And going after MAGA, because we're the devil, and going after Trump and going after J6ers. That's what that's what they were focused on.
It's like, well, Greg, why did the ratings go down in your tenure? Isn't your job to make sure ratings and revenue are up? And I said, well, no, I was concentrating on the music stations and sports stations down the hall. And they'd be like, well, that's not your job. I'm like, but it's what I wanted to concentrate on because it's a threat to democracy.
Thank you.
Coming
Thank you.
Up next, we will get to the Eagles' big victory in the playoffs.
Let's go, Harry!
With our man, Harry Mays.
Get up, Harry! Come on, let's go!
Ready to go. 9 o'clock hour brought to you by the Piazza Auto Group. The full Honda lineup is available today at your local Piazza Honda dealer in Philadelphia, Langhorne, Pottstown, Reading, or Springfield. Get financing as low as 0% for up to 60 months. On select models, online at PiazzaHonda.com. Eagles victory. We'll talk to Harry coming up next.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and on the free Odyssey app.
Harry, I know this was an ugly game yesterday. To be completely honest, I was very bored by it, but I do know they were about a five.
Speaking of bored. Is this Chris Ray and Company or Kale and Company? I mean, my God. You talk about a lead-in for me. I got to listen to Chris Ray prattle on with Scott Pelley. Was Scott Pelley chewing on the end of his eyeglasses during that interview?
Tough act to follow.
Then you know it's real serious discussion.
And that's
Scott
exactly
Pelley takes off the glasses.
That's right.
Yes. I got to ask Chris Way one thing. Yeah. Is that why my power is out right now? Because of the Chinese messing with my power grid?
We're going off the grid in more ways than one.
Sorry, Harry.
So you know it's serious when I take the glasses off. So let's break it down. Now, that was an ugly game. But they were a 5.5-point favorite, and they won by 12. Jalen Hurts.
Exactly.
Jalen Hurts did not look good. But do you have any concerns, or is a win at this point in the year?
I think a win is a win at this point in the year. Playoff football is not a beauty pageant. It's about winning the game, survive in advance. It's like the NCAA tournament. How many times do you see good teams, struggle early in games one or two, and they barely get by, and they go on to, play in the championship game. It happens. It's sports. Did he look great? No, but he's coming off a concussion. He had a couple of weeks of no activity. He wasn't even able to practice, they didn't really need him to be great. I mean, he didn't turn the ball over. So there's number one, and that's the Jalen Hurts of this year versus last year. Last year he was turning the ball over all the time. He didn't turn the ball over. They relied on their running game. They made plays when they had to, and their defense was great. And they got a break with no wide receivers for Green Bay. I mean, after a while, I was thinking they were going to have to go to the, call up Temple University and try to bring in a player, to suit up, during the fourth quarter. I mean, they were down to, their fifth or sixth wide receiver. Mm-hmm. So they got a break there. But, you win the game. Like you said, they covered the number. It was really never really in doubt. I thought. I was never really sitting there saying, oh my, they're going to lose this game. So now you sit back, you have another week of practice, you'll figure out who you play after tonight. And if I'm an Eagles fan, and I am, I want to play Minnesota rather than Los Angeles.
Yeah,
Do you agree?
Yes. I feel good about either one. I was going to ask you about that, but let me get your reasoning why. I'm assuming you feel better against Sam Darnold than you do Matt Stafford and Sean McVay. Is that part of the logic?
Oh, that's a big part of the logic. Absolutely. I mean, Sam Darnold looked very skittish in that big game. That was the biggest game of Sam Darnold's life a week or so ago against Detroit. And he looked like a deer in the headlights. He looked like New York Jets Sam Darnold. Okay, so there's that. There's also the McVay factor. I have a great deal of respect for what he does. It's also the second time that he will see this team this year. Remember, they played a few weeks ago out in Los Angeles, and the Eagles won. Mm-hmm. So you have that factor, and you have the factor that if it's Minnesota, it's their third straight road game. Okay, yeah. And you know, third straight road games in the NFL, especially playoffs. I think that definitely favors the Eagles.
Did you have an issue with the sideshow, sideline theatrics of A.J. Brown and reading the book? It feels to me like a passive-aggressive shot at, I'm not happy, I only have one catch. And it feels to me like a continuation of, you know, 6 weeks ago when he was asked, well, what's the issue with the offense? And he said, oh, it's the passing. It feels, I mean, does this feel like if it goes south, it's McNabb T.O. all over again?
You know, that's what I was thinking, and I was very entertained watching him read the passages from the book, whatever that book was. But then I saw afterwards that he's done this before. This is no big deal. He's done this before. No way. There's no way A.J. Brown can whip out a book on the sideline and not have 20 media members in the press box tweeting about it 5 seconds later, mm-hmm. or Fox putting it on TV or CBS, what have you. So I don't buy that at all. And I took it that way. Like, I'm not happy. It was sort of a T.O. kind of thing. You know, look at me. I'm going to make a spectacle of myself, whether I'm getting targeted with the football or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And, you know, maybe that's a smaller issue. But just going back to Jalen Hurts for a moment, I have this uneasy feeling in my gut that if the Eagles do not win the Super Bowl this year, you have a fan base that's just waiting to say, I told you so on Nick Sirianni. Yeah. And I told you so on Jalen Hurts. And with the Hurts front, you know, it's like he's making, what, $50 million or whatever it is. You know, there's a lot of people out there that say, well, I don't want to hear that you just didn't turn it over, or we have a great defense, or we have Saquon Barkley. They want to feel like they have a $50 million quarterback that can do what Patrick Mahomes does, even though we know that's not possible.
Right. He's not Patrick Mahomes. He's not even Lamar Jackson at this point. So, forget about that. But, I mean, if they don't win the Super Bowl, there's going to be a lot of, you know, pearl clutching and hand-wringing about the coach and the quarterback. And, there, you know, changes will probably have to be made, you know, whatever you can do. But, you know, he's not that player. I mean, you know, can he win a game for you? Yes, he can. And he can do it with his legs, too. And I think that's the kind of guy that I want to see, you know, playing in these, you know, NFC divisional round, NFC championship game. He's going to have to make some plays with his legs. You saw Daniels do it last night. You know, you see the quarterback up in Buffalo do it all the time. I mean, you know, Lamar Jackson, that's the stuff that he can do. He's not going to wow you, you know, through the air.
Are you guys familiar with James Palmer? He's a senior reporter for
NFL Network.
NFL, yeah. So he tweeted yesterday that wide receiver A.J. Brown handed me a beaten-up paperback copy of Inner Excellence, which was the book that he read, full of handwritten notes and highlighted sections. He has it with him every game, and you can tell it's been knocked off benches on sidelines week after week. Brown then showed me the passages he reads between drives. It calms his mind. He was kind enough to share. So there you go.
How about that?
So,
well, apparently, how do we only know knowing this now?
It's a great question.
Yeah.
It's a great question.
Yeah. What are the media members sitting up in the press box? What are they doing? Eating the baked ziti and the salad, and they're not focused on their job?
I hate to do it to Tim McManus, but my God, I mean, we need a tweet about that.
I agree. It's an outrage. Hey, I want to get your thoughts on two other football fronts. We'll get to the college in a second with James Franklin. But are you ready for Baltimore and Buffalo to be completely ruined by ESPN for the next week? Because you know they are going to make it about race between the two quarterbacks, Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. They're gonna kill my enjoyment for that game coming up on this weekend. I might not put on the television until Saturday.
Well, I don't. I mean, why do you? I mean, seriously, why tune into that crap?
No, you're right. You're right. And
it's crap.
And you know what they're going to, and you know how I know it? We just saw it last week when Notre Dame knocked off Penn State and Marcus Freeman beats James Franklin. And we played the clip on the cut sheet on Friday. Molly McGrath, the sideline reporter, asking Marcus Freeman about being a black coach in the national championship. And he gave a stellar answer where he basically, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said, I just want to see talented, good people succeed. And he kind of shoved it right back in her face.
Yeah, and I love Molly. I did a few games with her back in the day. She's great. And I think she was being fed that question. Like, they wanted to make sure that that question was asked. And I don't know that she came up with that on her own accord. But, yeah, Freeman answered it great. Yeah. He's terrific. And I'm a big fan of Marcus Freeman.
Last one for you. James Franklin. Obviously, on the losing end of this. You know, I'm one of these guys. I know you probably have banged on him in the past as well.
Yes.
And he never wins the big game. But I guess the question is, it's not my job to find a new guy, but if you think he has peaked, you have to get rid of this guy regardless of the buyout, no matter how much it costs for him to be unemployed and receive a paycheck at home. But the question is, can Penn State ever be better than what they are with James Franklin, considering the way they go about recruiting?
Well, how do you not have a wide receiver make a play in that game? I mean, you're Penn State playing in the Big Ten in the age of NIL, and you can't have a good wide receiver on your roster. That's beyond me, and that falls at his feet. I know, you know, people saying, well, he didn't throw the interception and all that. And yeah, I know the quarterback was terrible. Okay, the moment was too big for that kid, but. You know, he missed Singleton at the goal line. He underthrew Singleton, which would have been a touchdown on the first drive, which totally would have changed that game, and they'd probably go on to win. But, yeah, I mean, you know, at some point you got to say, do we want to win a national championship or do we want to win 10, 11 games and, you know, every now and then play in the Big Ten championship game, you know, and get in the playoff? Mm-hmm. So that's the question.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, you know my answer.
Yeah. No, it's not good
enough.
I'm
all about firing people.
Yes. Accountability. Doge.
Exactly.
The Department of Government Efficiency. We need a doge in college football. That's what we need.
Yes, we do. And my power just came back on. So
oh,
thank you.
Wow, look at that.
Yeah, see, Christopher Ray was listening to you.
He was.
And now we'll get back to Christopher Ray and Scott Pelley. Thank you very much, Harry.
All right. Thank you.
All right, there he is, Harry Mays.
Get up, Harry. Come on. Let's go.
It's Kale and Company on demand from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Let's get caught up in the world of news and some other stories that are out there. Time for a Dawn Stenzel and Big 3 at 9:38.
It's the Big 3 and 9 on Kale and Company.
Sponsored by American Heritage Credit Union this morning. Sickness is surging again in our region. Public health experts call this the quademic. We talked about it. I mean, I think my family and a lot of us were struck over the holiday break, but here it is again. Mm-hmm. Another wave of illnesses circulating right now. RSV, flu, norovirus, as well as COVID. Looks like the cases of walking pneumonia, those are waning a bit, according to officials. How do they track this? The wastewater testing. And this is according to the CDC. They routinely test, and in Philadelphia and our region, apparently showing very high levels of COVID as well as moderate levels of the flu. So wastewater testing, it's considered an accurate method of tracking the spread of viruses in real time. And so the real concern here is the RSV for little ones as well as elderly folks. And so, you know, tracking as well with the pediatric hospitals, CHOP, that sort of thing. But it's a time where they want to give the heads up. The RSV is when, especially a baby or young child, they have that wheezing and a very high fever. This is maybe a 103 degree or above fever, and that's when you want to go to the emergency department.
Yeah, I just got the text during our interview with Harry. My wife said that Olivia has stayed home today. Mm-hmm. She's got a stomach issue, she's got a headache, and she's very pale in the face.
No good.
Great.
So the headache,
is it April yet?
So are you preparing to be out?
Yeah.
I get sick on Christmas break.
Just remember, we need you next Monday.
Yeah. I'll be there. Big day next Monday. I'm sick of
can indicate COVID, but if she has norovirus, then that's thing.
Norovirus, luckily, is quick. It's fast moving. You know, like it's like
but
a 24-hour thing. It's like a 24-hour thing, and you and your whole family will get it within 24 hours, and then you'll be done with it. But you're not allowed to take any days off.
No, I'm good till Easter.
Okay.
Yeah.
There is looking at the latest unemployment numbers that came out on Friday. So the number of jobs added was bigger than we thought. That was one of the headlines. But within that, as we analyze the numbers, bad news for younger Americans struggling to find work. Employment of workers ages, especially in the mid-20s to early 30s, this was the second largest yearly decline. And these from the latest jobs numbers that came out in December. So the good news, you may say, unemployment rate 4.1%, slightly lower than the economists' expectations. But overall, we saw gains, about 250,000 new jobs or gain in jobs. The problem is that overall number could stop the Fed from continuing to lower the interest rates. Mm. And that's why I think we're seeing the stock market down, why it dropped on by the end of the day on Friday.
Yep.
So that just looking within the numbers is trying to track some of those numbers. Number three, I'll go with a lighter, and thank you, Jimmy Kelly, for sending me this. We've talked about All in the Family. So back on this day, 54 years ago today, Hollywood history, speaking of, the fires, and we've talked a lot about so much news this week, but 1971, All in the Family premiered on CBS and featuring the first toilet to flush ever on television.
How about that? Yeah. By the way, speaking of All in the Family, I've got to return the DVDs to Jimmy Kelly. He's given me both, I don't know how many seasons, however many seasons, he let me watch those like a year and a half ago, and they're still sitting somewhere at home in a box.
Didn't
know Rob Reiner.
Atrociously admitted that you had never seen All in the Family.
I know. Who knew that was the launch pad for Married with Children all those years later?
Yeah, okay.
But didn't you think it was like was that the show with Urkel or something? It was so funny.
I got the show completely wrong. One of my many errors.
It was fun. No, it was fun. Hey, we are sponsored by American Heritage Credit Union. Is your auto lease nearing its end? Consider a lease buyout with American Heritage. So you'll choose a cost-effective option that keeps you in the vehicle that you love. Learn more at AmericanHeritageCU.org/auto. Insured by NCUA. Not a member? That's okay. Join today. Equal Opportunity Lender. American Heritage Credit Union sponsoring our big three.
All right. Thank you very much, Don.
We can go through a couple more cuts that I have here if you want to do this.
Yeah. You got any more Christopher Ray, Scott Pelley to tick off Harry?
No, I don't. But Katie Britt was on with Jake Tapper over the weekend talking about the confirmation of Pam Bondi, because Don mentioned earlier that the confirmation hearings, I believe, are going to start this week.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true?
Yes.
Pam Bondi. No dates have been set yet for Tulsi or RFK Jr., but Pete Hegseth.
It's tomorrow.
Yeah. Let's hear from Katie Britt on Pam Bondi.
We'll testify before your committee later this week. You have said she has your support and she will help restore the Department of Justice to become one, quote, driven by blind justice, not blind partisan politics, unquote. We should note, as a member of Trump's legal team in 2020, she falsely claimed that Trump had won Pennsylvania, which he had not. She spread baseless claims about widespread cheating by Democrats, about fake ballots. That is partisan politics, what she said in 2020. That is not justice.
What a way to
phrase Jake, it. I mean, look at what's happened under the Biden administration. We have people in these offices who have chosen to go after American citizens, who have chosen to weaponize the justice system in a number of ways. When I talked with Pam Bondi, she committed to me to getting back to doing the job of the people, to getting back to doing what the department was created to do. So whether we're talking about the AG, whether we're talking about the FBI, whether they're talking about the Department of Defense, people want these agencies, these departments, to actually work for the American people. Pam is committed to that. I think you will see that. What President Trump has done is he has selected people who are willing to not move as business as usual, but yet are ready for action. They understand his vision for the nation. They understand the mandate that was given on November 5th, and they understand that time for talk is gone and time for results and action is now. And so I think people are actually sick of the weaponization. We had this conversation. We talked about politics not being part of the process of what you do in the department. She is committed to that, and I think she's going to do an excellent job of returning the department to the work of the American people. And I am excited for her hearing. I'm certainly excited. It'll be my very first hearing as a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. We've got a lot of great nominees on the Hill this week, and they'll have the opportunity not only to make their case to those on that committee, Jake, but they'll have their opportunity to make their case to the American people of why they are best suited to move President Trump's agenda forward.
But why would you think somebody who's willing to lie about the election results in Pennsylvania is going to restore integrity in the Justice Department the way that you are calling for?
Look, Jake, I've had very direct conversations with each and every one of these nominees that I've had the opportunity to sit down with. I take my duty as a United States Senator seriously. Article 2, Section 2 mandates that I do. We have an obligation both to the American people and to the president to ask these tough questions. I ask that question very directly. And with each and every nominee, the answers that I have been given with them has satisfied me that they're going to move forward in that direction. So I'm sure she'll have an opportunity to answer this in front of the American people. But the answer she has given me, most definitely, she is not only qualified, but she's ready to move forward and move forward in a way that the American people deserve.
Remember last week when I said I did the big take on Democrats moving forward and legacy media moving forward for the sake of the future of both entities? And I said it looks like the legacy media is not going to move on. Right there. I mean, look, it's their business model, not mine. So if I haven't lost 58% of my audience, so it doesn't really matter. But if I was Jake Tapper and CNN trying to restore credibility, Tapper also, by the way, at the center of a 2021 defamation suit.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Yeah, yes. Where he might cost his company like Stephanopoulos did.
Yeah.
So if you want to talk about nominations and you want to do it from a left-wing partisan perspective, here's how I would have framed the question. I wouldn't have talked about 2020 and Pam Bondi. I would have said, we saw what happened with Matt Gaetz. He's not going to make it through. Do you envision every other nominee beyond Matt Gaetz getting through? Bobby Kennedy, Tulsi Gabbard, Pete Hegseth, so forth and so on. And my answer to that question is yes. I think come hell or high water, Matt Gaetz is the only guy that did not get through. I think when this week is over and all is said and done, everybody that Trump is picking is going to get through. If it's not through the confirmation process, the traditional way, what's the term again that we're, I cited all the numbers, all these presidents use them a bunch to push them through. What the hell's the
recess appointments.
Recess appointments, oh. Yes. Obama did over like 1,300 of them.
Yep.
Trump will do the same thing.
Yep, agreed. Let's do the Morning Mystery Movie
Clip. All right, let's find out what it is today.
And now, the Morning Mystery Movie Clip on Kale and Company. Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All season long, when you had nothing left, you just come up with it. And you had success after success. You did it. You did it. And that's how we got here. From your efforts. From your efforts, we're here.
We are 2 minutes away from a national championship. Latin, I'm putting you back in. Right now, it's not about talent. It's about heart. It's about who can go out there and play the hardest. Who can go out there and play the smartest.
This team's a special team. Special team. You're going to win this game.
Think you know what it is? Be call at 12 at 855-839-1210, and you could win this great prize.
Today, a pair of tickets to the Philadelphia Orchestra's performance of Tchaikovsky's Pathetique which is what my wife says sometimes. After a couple of drinks, she goes, Nicholas, you're very pathetic. And I just say, you're right. But it's coming up on Thursday, January 23rd at the Kimmel Center's Marian Anderson Hall. For tickets and more info, visit Phil, P-H-I-L, Ork, O-R-C-H, .org. PhilOrk.org. Caller 12-855-839-1210. In no way, shape, or form affiliated with Phil Omquist, because that is Today in Music History.
What happened on this day in music history? Music history. On Kale & Company.
Today, January 13th, we celebrate the birthdays of James Lomenzo from White Lion, Black Label Society, as well as Megadeth, among others, who's now 66, Don Snow from Squeeze, who's 68, and Trevor Rabin from Yes, who's now 71. Heavenly birthday shouts to Tim Kelly from Slaughter, as well as Fred White from Earth, Wind, and Fire. Singles include Let's Spend the Night Together by The Stones in 67. Albums include Yellow Submarine by The Beatles in 69. Machine Messiah by Sepultura in 2017. No Mean City by Nazareth in 79. Learning to Crawl by The Pretenders in 84. And Defenders of the Faith by Judas Priest also in 1984. Also in 2005, Incubus stated donated $100,000 to tsunami relief efforts. In 90, Rod Stewart's Downtown Train was atop the mainstream rock chart. In 84, BBC Radio 1 announced the ban on Relax, the song by Frankie Goes to Hollywood, after a DJ called it obscene. In 78, the Police started recording their debut album. In 67, Paul McCartney and Ringo attended a Jimi Hendrix show. In 68, Johnny Cash played the first of two shows at Folsom Prison. In 62, Chubby Checker was atop the singles chart with a twist. And in 2022, Baby Shark became the first video on YouTube to reach 10 billion views. But lastly, on this day in 79, the YMCA filed a lawsuit against the Village People, claiming their song YMCA was defaming to the organization. However, not only was the suit dropped, the YMCA later adopted the song as an unofficial jingle after seeing a huge popularity boost. For Kale & Company, I'm Phil Hockquist.
Well, a lot occurred today in music history. Wow, I was actually.
And that was just scratching the surface.
How about that? A little Baby Shark. That's one song, if you ever hear,
you will never get out of your head ever.
It is impossible to get out of your head.
Ever. For the rest of time.
All right, the Dawn Show in exactly 8 minutes and 1 second. We find out what she has lined up top of the hour.
Yeah, there's so much breaking. We're obviously following Mayor Parker's news conference that'll happen this morning about the Sixers, that shocker news that we heard about over the weekend, new arena in South Philadelphia, not going to Market East. And as far as on the jobs front, the big headline for tomorrow with these 13 cabinet nominees appearing this week within the Trump hoped for cabinet, Pete Hegseth. So somebody who will be on Capitol Hill tomorrow cheering on the military veteran Pete Hegseth will join me right at 10 o'clock this morning. Our friend Gold Star Dad Charlie Strange is going to join me and talk about what he's been up to. Remember, Trump made him an important promise. We'll talk about that. Will Charlie be at the inauguration 1 week from today? And then why is he rooting for one Pete Hegseth? So we'll have a great conversation with him. In the 11 o'clock hour, we will talk to a great expert about TikTok, social media, children, all of that as news swirls around TikTok. And speaking of TikTok, the clock ticking on TikTok to expire and be banned as of the 19th if SCOTUS goes along with the ban. Wow, yeah, there's so much breaking as I speak.
Yeah, so we'll the 19th, that'll be Sunday.
Yeah.
Okay. Stay tuned for the Dawn Show.
By the way, we didn't get a winner.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's going to have to push over till tomorrow.
Jimmy Kelly has to work overtime and stick around longer?
The answer is Glory Road.
Glory Road.
That's the answer. Phil, was there a reason that movie was picked today?
Yes, it came out today.
Okay.
Okay.
I've never heard of the movie. So.
Glory Road?
Yeah.
What year did that come out?
I don't know.
2009, I think, something like that.
I think that you should have done the toilet flushing and asked about, like, All in the Family.
Not to mention the the sequel to that, which was a straight-to-video classic called Glory Hole.
All right, well, since you want it gone, I'll just use it one last time.
Thank you very much.
There you go. All right, everybody, have a great rest of your Monday. And we will see you tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Stay tuned. The Dawn Show is coming up next.
Good night, everybody.
Start your day with Kale and Company. Weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.